For more talks and meditations, go to GloriaKGreen.com. Mastering our minds. According to Judson Brewer, you have to know how your mind works before you can work with it. If we don't know how our mind works, how can we work with our mind? How can we be the master of our mind if we don't know how it's working? When we're the masters of our mind, we can use them to see reality, to problem solve, and to determine what the right next step is. But sometimes we let the mind master us by not being aware of what we're thinking, by believing figments of our imagination, or by going into a never-ending thought loop that just goes round and round and often makes us feel really grumpy. Thoughts are simply what our minds do. They're not good and they're not bad. We can't turn our thoughts off. As you know, when you try and meditate, thoughts just pop up. And that's not what we're trying to do, is turn our thoughts off. But when we're meditating, what we're trying to do is learn about our thoughts and change how they influence our lives. To be the master of your thoughts, you start by being aware of your thoughts, which meditation helps us with. You disentangle yourself from them. When we meditate, we disentangle from our thoughts by focusing our concentration on our breath. And then we can decide how we want to deal with them. If we're too caught up in our thoughts, our world is too small and we can't see all the options and the opportunities. Thoughts are really a driving force of our mood, our behavior, and ultimately our life. So we want to use them to shape the life that we want. Don Miguel Ruiz, who's an artist, says your mind is a glass blower, shaping a delicate world for your body to occupy. Your mind is a glass blower, shaping a delicate world for your body to occupy. Our thoughts are not reality. They're not the way things really are. And more importantly, they're not who we are. They may be a tiny part of us, but they're not all of us. Sometimes we let our thoughts limit us. The thought, I'm a bad meditator, leads us to not want to meditate. And when we do meditate, we say, see, I am a bad meditator. Confirming our initial thought was true, making it that much harder to meditate the next time. Every one of us human beings has two minds. One is totally ours, and it's like a faint voice that brings us order, directness, and purpose. The other mind is a foreign installation. It brings us conflict, self-assertion, doubts, and hopelessness. To resolve the conflict of the two minds is a matter of intending it, according to Carlos Castaneda. So we can choose what we're going to do with the 2,000 to 3,000 thoughts we have each hour. But it takes practice. We're unaware of most of these thoughts, whether they come from ourselves or from foreign installations. We just don't even realize they're going on. But most of these thoughts are rehashing the past, or they're stirring up anxiety about the future. We meditate to train our mind to become aware of the thoughts so we can recognize which mind it comes from, ours or that foreign installation. We can choose to remain lost in the thought or to change the channel. We can decide if we want to believe the thought. And we can determine if we're going to allow that thought to influence our words and our actions. Mindfulness practice does not turn off our thoughts, but it allows us to look deeply at our thoughts in a kind and non-judgmental way. Because if we're judging our thoughts, we're practicing judging, And I don't know about you, but I'm already really good at judging. I need no more practice there. But if we're kind to ourselves, we're practicing kindness. And there I could use some more practice, learning to be kind to myself. Mindfulness is not just about seeing the thoughts. It's about looking at them in a curious, kind, and non-judgmental way. We identify thoughts as simply that, thoughts. Our mindfulness practice helps us to work with our thoughts in three fundamental ways. First, we become aware of the constant torrent of thoughts cascading through our minds. With mindfulness, we become more aware of our thoughts and the content of our thoughts. We notice our habits of mind and how repetitive our thinking is by simply listening to mindful awareness. It's like you're watching that thought on a movie screen. Here it is again. You see the transient nature of thoughts, that they're fleeting ideas, that they're impermanent. But some of them keep coming up over and over again. You may notice how you're hopscotching through time and space, pinging from one thought to another. Sometimes the thoughts are constructive, and sometimes they're not. More often than not, our thoughts are about our emotions, desires, experiences, and needs. So, in addition to being aware of the thought coming up in your mind, you also want to pay attention to whether or not you're adding on to the thought. Typically, we add the thought, something's wrong, either wrong in general or more likely wrong with the other person or ourselves. It's like when we're looking at the sun and saying, yeah, but tomorrow is supposed to be cloudy. So instead of standing there enjoying the sunshine, we're looking at tomorrow when the sky is going to be gray. Second, we need to extricate ourselves from the stories that we're constantly creating. When we disentangle ourselves from our thoughts, we realize that just because you have a thought doesn't mean you have to believe it. We don't have to act on it, and we certainly don't have to get caught up in a whole stream of thoughts. We can discover with great relief that our thoughts don't fully define us. We need to acknowledge the experience of a story unfolding and feel the emotions and the body sensations related to that story. If we can feel the body sensations, that can be our bell of mindfulness. It's amazing. I've been saying the five contemplations at breakfast when I do eating meditation, and two of them are really relevant. The first one is one of them is, may I eat in mindfulness so as to be grateful for it? And the second one is, may I transform my habit energies and learn to eat in moderation? And what I've noticed is that when I start to say, oh, I think I'm hungry, I come back to these two and really transform my habit energies and learn to eat in moderation has made me say, am I really hungry? Do I really need something to eat, or is it something else? So I have this story that I need to eat this, but the story's really not true. I'm really not hungry for food. I'm hungry for something else. So when I stop and take a breath, I can look at that more clearly and determine whether I need to snack or not. And when we recognize the thought, we're less likely to identify with it or become lost in the thought. We can transform one-sided thoughts of certainty into a world of liberating possibilities. So instead of the certainty, I am a bad meditator, we can say that's one-sided, but the opportunity of becoming more mindful and becoming better at meditation, These are opportunities that I have, and all they take is practice. So we can, when our minds wander during our meditation, we can rehash the story, I'm a bad meditator, or we can turn it around and say, I'm getting more practice bringing my mind back to the present moment. The third thing we can do is choose what we do with our thoughts. And we're going to look at four options. We can stay lost in the thought. We can try to ignore the thought. We can become curious about the thought, or we can simply just change the channel on the thought. When we're lost in thought, our thoughts become our master. We often have trouble changing the channel on our thoughts because we let anxiety take over. When we're lost in negative thinking, we can become distressed. Our prefrontal cortex actually stops working, and our amygdala pushes us onto the hamster wheel of reactivity. The wheel spins round and round, and we can't get off no matter how hard we try. We just keep going around and around with those same thoughts over and over. According to Ursa Beda, this is called cognitive shock, which turns off the cognitive mind's basic ability to function. When the thinking brain is on sabbatical, we simply can't think clearly. During cognitive shock, the old brain, which is based on survival and defense, takes over. At this point, we're likely to attack, withdraw, or go numb, none of which are conducive to awareness. So when we stay lost in thought, we're allowing ourselves to turn off our prefrontal cortex and just work with our primitive brain, the amygdala. But a lot of times we don't like these thoughts, and so we want to push them away. When they're unpleasant, we want to put our head in the sand and ignore the thoughts. And I've been the master at this for my entire life. When you ignore the thoughts, you think they go away, but they actually remain in your unconscious. No matter how hard you try to push them away, they keep coming back, sometimes without you even being aware. So we have a natural resistance to being uncomfortable and unsafe. And so when unpleasant thoughts swarm in our heads, we leave the present moment and we distract ourselves. But the resistance keeps us hooked. It's for a long time why I was the master at staying busy and knowing everything and doing everything and fixing everything. Because I didn't want to deal with the thoughts, and as long as I was too busy, I didn't have to deal with them. Ursa Beda says, our deeply believed thoughts of personal insecurity may not be evident on the surface in a given situation. Truthfully, we're often unaware of their presence, but their poisonous footprint often manifests itself in our anger, blame, depression, and shame. These deeply believed and well-hidden thoughts of insecurity act like radar, and we often seek out experiences that confirm our beliefs are true, the classic self-fulfilling prophecy. I know for me that's been the case when I've ignored my thoughts and thought and just seek out situations where nobody's going to want to be with me, so I don't reach out, and they don't reach out then, and that confirms to me nobody wants to be with me, rather than taking actions to do what I want to do. The third one is become curious. Really become curious about your thoughts. It's a more skillful way to deal with them. We often think of our memory of the past as reality, but our brains are not video recorders. They just take photographs, and we fill in the places between those photographs to make up our stories of the past. That's why two people talking about what happened in something have totally different stories, because we concoct what we think happened. And when we believe these stories of the past, we're just believing in a figment of our imagination. curious and judgment-free thinking doesn't come naturally to us. It really does need to be learned. It requires us to step back and take off either our rose-colored glasses or our dark glasses. We attempt to see reality as it is without distorting it. But the way our brains are designed, perception automatically takes place. So we have to step back and say, this is my perception, knowing this is part of the picture, but it might not be the whole picture. And so that certainty has to go away, and we have to deal with our don't know mind. We have to acknowledge that the past cannot be changed. No matter how many times we rehash it, it's not going to change. And we can get creative about choosing our next words or our next actions when we're curious. So when we're curious, we ask things like, is this true, partially true, or not really true at all? We can ask, how does it feel in my body? If it feels tight and clenching, we're looking at the small picture. And if we can relax our body, we can see more and open up the view to be a little bit more spacious. What are the underlying beliefs or feelings that make this thought so powerful that it keeps coming back over and over again? Because until we deal with those feelings, that thought's just going to keep popping up no matter how many times we play whack-a-mole with it. And then if we're curious, we can say, how can I see things differently? How can I see things differently than how I'm seeing them now? Maybe I'm seeing that this person did a terrible thing to me and they're out to get me. Or maybe I can look at it differently and say, this person wouldn't be hurting me if they weren't suffering. I wonder what's behind that. And then what do I need in order to let go of this thought? Maybe I need to talk to a friend. Maybe I need to distract myself. And that's the last way we deal with our thoughts, is by changing the channel. It's not always easy to do, but we can learn to change the channel by meditating, and that helps us to understand that we have control over where our attention is focused, and we can change the focus of our attention. We can decide what we're going to attend to and how we're going to attend to it. And the more we practice that in meditation and with little things, the stronger that muscle gets and the easier it's going to be. We learn that we can let the thoughts fade into the background by shifting our attention to something else. We don't get rid of the thoughts by pushing them away. And so the more we practice, the easier it gets, so that eventually, even with difficult, sticky thoughts, we can change the channel. Sometimes the best way to change the channel is through distraction. You know, reading a good book, watching a movie, calling a friend, doing something different is a way to change the channel. And that's totally appropriate to do as long as you're not doing it all the time. There's going to be some point in time where you need to face that thought or the feelings underneath it in order to work through them. But sometimes it's just not the right time. And so you change the channel by distracting yourself. And you come back to it when you're feeling a little more stronger. So it takes a lot of effort and courage to look at our thoughts objectively and non-judgmentally. But this is what's really necessary if we want to be the master of our minds. The effort is really worthwhile because thoughts really are a driving force for our mood, our behavior, and ultimately our life.